Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to The Score for Sunday, March 29th. I'm David Schuster. I'm going to keep you company up until 8 o'clock this evening. Still to come here on the show, we got Tom Doerr, former Bulls broadcaster, coming up at 6:30. And Bruce Levine will join us to talk all things baseball. That'll be at 7 o'clock. Adam Studzinski has now left the building, and Julio Roseo is now the producer and co-pilot back in our downtown studios. And we talked about Tom Doerr before. He's going to be joining us at 6:30. And Tom, of course, was at Madison Square Garden 25 years ago today when Michael Jordan scored those 55 points and Bill Winnington had the game-winning basket. And, you know, I read a lot of the stories today about how all the fans were rooting for Michael Jordan. A lot of those were New York Knicks fans. And it made me wonder, over the years, and I've had my favorites, you know, in other sports as well, from non-Chicago athletes, so I'm going to throw this out to the class. Who are some of your favorite players that you love to watch but who are not Chicago players? Or maybe these are players that broke your heart because they beat the Bulls or they beat the Cubs or they beat the White Sox, what have you. So I'm going to give you my list of favorite players, whether growing up or as a young adult, players in sports, but not Chicago athletes. So I'll just run them down. And I'll start with football. I was always a big Barry Sanders fan because Barry Sanders always reminded me of Gale Sayers. He had the kind of moves that Gale Sayers had. He could stop on a dime. He could turn. He could outrun you. In football, Barry Sanders was always a player that I loved watching, not only close up or from afar. In hockey, it was the great one, Wayne Gretzky. I mean, my God, how could you not? Wayne Gretzky just did things that have still never been matched and probably never will be matched. The 200-point seasons and all the goals that he scored. I mean, did he have 92 goals one season or whatever crazy number it was? Wayne Gretzky, to me, was just so much fun to watch because he was so much heads and tails better than everybody else. Major League Baseball, I couldn't limit it to one player. So I have one pitcher and one everyday player. And this is going way back. But when I was a little kid, Sandy Koufax, I was just enamored with what he was doing on the mound during his heyday, the 3 or 4 year stretch where he just hardly could be touched. Sandy Koufax is a pitcher. But then as a young adult, and I got a chance to cover him as a player, Ken Griffey Jr. I loved what Ken Griffey Jr. did as a baseball player every day. And I'm not talking just about offense, but I'm also talking about defense. I mean, to see him run down balls, to see him climb up the wall, and to make some miraculous catches and catch balls that were going over the wall, to see some of the throws he made from the outfield. Ken Griffey Jr. was just a marvelous, marvelous baseball player. And then in basketball, I couldn't limit it to just one player. So I'm going to throw out three players that I've loved watching, both growing up and as a young adult. Pete Maravich, I mean, I was enamored with him, what he could do with a basketball. The basketball was on a string to him all the time. He just did things, you know, some of the assists that he made also. Bill Walton, I remember watching him initially at UCLA. I know he was a high school tremendous player in Southern California, and then he came to UCLA, and he was part of that 88-game win streak that the Bruins had, and, you know, him and Greg Lee with some of the alley-oops, although they couldn't initially. I don't think they were able to dunk, if I'm not mistaken. Well, actually, they probably did. That was Jabbar, who couldn't dunk initially during his college career, but I think Walton was able to throughout his entire career. I might be wrong about that. Him and Greg Lee would team up with some incredible plays. But Bill Walton was such a smart basketball player, and before he injured his foot, the couple of years he played out in Portland and they won the championship, him and Twardzik and some of the other players on that great team, Bill Walton was just fun for me to watch as a basketball player. And, of course, Dr. J. Before Michael, before some of the other high flyers, Dr. J was out there doing a lot of the things. So loved watching all these players. But, you know, who for you? Give me a call, 312-644-6767. I know Julio Roseo is now back in our downtown studios. Julio, I'll let you lead it off. Who would you like to, some of the players that you like to watch over all these years?
Well, some of these guys almost, David. Now, thankfully, Les isn't on the air with us, but these guys almost turned me into a Packer fan growing up, watching Reggie White, and watching Brett Favre play, ripping the hearts out of Bears fans for so many years. You had to admire the way those guys played, especially Reggie White. I've never seen a defensive player like him growing up. I was, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 during his prime when he was in Green Bay. So those two, especially on the NFL side. You mentioned Junior Griffey, who I loved watching him play. But also I loved watching with the fortunes of we had TBS and WGN, so watching a lot of Expos games and seeing Vladimir Guerrero play a whole chunk of his career, a sensational player, David, one of my favorite major leaguers of all time. On the NHL side, Alex Ovechkin, the way he's been, the way you watch him on the ice these days, how easy it is for him to score a goal and how easy it is for him to rally an entire team like in Washington the last few years, loved watching him play. And on the NBA side, I mean, we're spoiled as Chicagoans. So growing up and watching Michael Jordan, there's no other player in my eyes.
Yeah, no, Michael's absolutely the best. And we'll have Tom Doerr, who broadcast a lot of his games over all those years. He'll be talking about Michael Jordan coming up at the bottom of the hour. I actually do have the text line in front of me here, Julio, so I can read those. But if there's anybody who calls in, again, our number, 312-644-6767, Julio will pop them up and he'll tell me about them and we'll listen to them. I'm reading some of the texts myself, 630 area code, watch a lot of Jordan, a lot of Kobe, a lot of Shaq. But no one will ever be as amazing to watch basketball than LeBron James. LeBron James certainly broke a lot of hearts here in Chicago. Certainly that year that the Bulls looked like with Derrick Rose, you know, going on to win the MVP that season, that it looked like the Bulls would finally get back to the championships series. But nope, LeBron took it away, and he took it away from Bulls fans over a lot of the years. Michael's still better in my eyes, but LeBron James is just one of the best, if you know, the one of the top two or three players of all time. Sorry, but Michael's still always going to be number one in my book. Ken Griffey Jr., we're getting that. All right, we do have a caller now on the line, 312-644-67. So let's go out to Central Illinois. Let's hear from Steve. Go ahead, Steve. You're on with David and Julio.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was coming back home from the store and heard what you were saying about, you know, the best, some of the most, you know, best athletes and whatnot. But Bo Jackson, man. I mean, like, remember when he ran up in the outfield up on the wall? You know, what a superb athlete he was, for God's sake.
Huh? Well, you're right about that, Steve. And, of course, he did that. First of all, he played not only as an opposing player, but, of course, he played with the White Sox also. So you get the best of all world as far as that goes. But, yeah, Bo Jackson was just an incredible, incredible athlete, not only in baseball, of course, but also in basketball. And, you know, some of the exploits that he did both collegiately and then in the pros in the NFL, you know, just, you know, were unparalleled. But, yes, Bo Jackson certainly qualifies as both a local athlete and a player that you also like to watch from afar. Again, for me, there's so many other players over all the years that I've enjoyed watching, you know, and have hated watching too. Like I said, you know, LeBron James has broken numerous hearts here in Chicago over all those years. Here's another one calling in from the 312 area code, Albert Pujols. hit a homer at Wrigley last season onto the street off Cole Hamels, his last ever at Wrigley. I think he puts that in as a question. Yeah, Pujols is another player as a Cub fan who you hated watching over all those years. 312-644-6767. And I mentioned that Ken Griffey Jr., a great defensive player, and so I was thinking about this one also as I was starting to write this up. Even before we get to that, let's go out first of all to St. Charles. Let's pick it up. I can't tell who the name of the person is, but let's go out there to St. Charles. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, it's Mark. David, how are you?
Go ahead, Mark. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hey, you stole my Edmonton Oilers. I think it's not just Gretzky, but it was the Oilers being the Blackhawks in the 80s. But the person, the person that I called in with is Greg Maddux.
Sure.
After the Cubs traded him, it was just fun to watch him.
Yeah, much like Bo Jackson, Greg Maddux, both away from Chicago and, of course, here in Chicago. So you got the best of all worlds or the worst of all worlds. Yeah, Mark, I got to ask you about this because I remember those Edmonton Oilers teams. They were – okay, but he's gone. But the Hawks were so good during that stretch themselves. You know, maybe in another era or another year, they would have gone on to win some cups themselves. You had the Larmers, you had the Savards, so on and so forth. But Edmonton was so darn good, led by Gretzky and Fuhr in the nets and Messier and Yari Curry and all those other guys. Again, 312-644-6767. I started telling you about Ken Griffey Jr. as a defensive player. So I started thinking, and Julio, I'll ask you to chime in on this one as well, the best defensive players you've ever seen at certain positions. Now, some of these guys, best defensive players, were superstars, five-tool players. I mean, you think of Roberto Clemente in the outfield, maybe the best defensive right fielder of all time. I mean, he could do it all, maybe had the best arm maybe of any baseball player ever. But I'm thinking, what other players besides, you know, Roberto Clemente, and I'm going to go position by position for me, some of the players over all these years, I'll go by them real quickly, and then we'll go back out to the phone lines. First baseman, I mean, Anthony Rizzo is really, really good as a defensive player. The best defensive first baseman, it was on the south side, actually, Mike Squires. And Bruce Levine will remember this when we talk at 7 o'clock. Squires at first base, Roberto Alomar at second base, Ozzie Smith at shortstop for me, Brooks Robinson at third base. I mentioned Roberto Clemente in the outfield. Dwight Evans was incredibly gifted as a defensive ball player. Griffey in center field, Carl Yastrzemski in left field. Some other outfielders, Jim Edmonds, Willie Mays. Barry Bonds was a great defensive left fielder. Johnny Bench behind the plate, and the best defensive pitchers that I can recall, Greg Maddux and Jim Cott. All right, 312-644-6767. Again, Julio, I can't really read this. It's Wayne from calling from Indiana. Go ahead, Wayne. You're on with David and Julio.
Hey, Dave. How you doing, big buddy?
I'm good, Wayne. How are you?
I'm doing fine, buddy. Doing fine. Hey, before I get to my favorite player, I was just telling while I'm sitting around here on this house arrest stuff we're on, I watched an old VCR that I made, and here's Michael Jordan playing against the Bulls in a Wizards uniform.
That breaks your heart, doesn't it?
It was. I hated it. But I mean, he had Jerry Stackhouse and Detlef Schrempf. There was a bunch of old has-beens on that team. But the Bulls beat him. I think they had Marcus Fizer on the Bulls team at the time. But my favorites were Reggie Miller. I used to watch him shoot. He could shoot the eyes out of it. And when I lived in San Diego for a while, I went and saw Willie McCovey and Willie Mays and Juan Marichal play against the Padres, and that was really great, and that was really something. And
some of those
Bill
giant
Bill Laimbeer and Starks, man, I hate them guys, man, hate them.
I was gonna say, I hope those are not your favorite players, because yeah, both of those players were certainly hated by people here in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, I appreciate the phone call. Appreciate it. 312-644. Thanks a lot. 312-644-6767. All right, we're getting a lot of good people texting in. Someone saying from the 847 area code, Vlad Guerrero's arm is good as Clemente. I mean, we'll never be able to say who was better. I mean, it's just a matter of opinion, obviously. Vlad Guerrero had an incredible arm. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. For me, though, Clemente was the best arm I ever saw. Listen, another Pirate outfielder, Dave Parker, especially early on in his career, he had about as good an arm as anybody during the era that he played in. 219 area code talking about defensive players, Mike Schmidt and Keith Hernandez. Keith Hernandez, not one of my favorites of all time, but yes, a very, very, very good defensive ball player. 219 area code talking about players from other cities that you enjoyed watching. Allen Iverson in basketball, Jaromir Jagr in hockey, Griffey, of course, in baseball, A-Rod, Jerry Rice in football. Jesse Barfield, another one with a really good arm from right field for the Toronto Blue Jays over all those years. We're getting a lot of good texters coming in. Let's see, I'm reading this one from the 630 area code. David Justice, Chipper Jones, Dale Murphy, Dave Winfield. I'm not even sure which question. I guess these are athletes that you liked watching on other teams. Boy, this list is long. They got Magic. They got Gretzky. They got Joe Montana, Brett Favre, Steve Young. That's Officer Mike checking in from the 630 area code. Defensive ball players, Julio, anybody else come to mind on your list? Okay. We got some people calling in at 312-644-6767. Again, you can text us at 67011. Julio Roseo is my producer and co-pilot back in the studio, and he's got the phone lines jammed up right now. He's answering the phones, and we'll get those people on in just a matter of moments. Again, coming up at 6:30, we do have Tom Doerr, who will be joining us. Tom right now lives down in Austin, Texas. Oh, I even want to ask him what it's like down there. I've always heard that's a beautiful city. Want to ask him about that. But, of course, he's on specifically to talk about the 25-year anniversary with Michael Jordan scoring those 55 points and Bill Winnington scoring the game-winning basket. Let's go back out to the phone lines. Let's pick it up with Luis, who's checking in from Aurora. Go ahead, Luis.
Yes, I just want to mention two great players. One from Blue Jays, that's Robertito Alomar. I think he was the best second base of all times. Mm-hmm. And another one is Omar Vizquel from the Indians. He was a great shortstop.
Fantastic shortstop, absolutely. You know, I'm not really sure who would be better between him and Ozzie Smith. I mean, they're both way, way, way up the totem pole. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. And Roberto Alomar, of course, not only did he play in Toronto, but he played, of course, in Cleveland. And he's on my list for the best defensive second baseman that I ever saw. There might be some people from going further back. But, yeah, he's definitely high on my list. You know, it's interesting. We've got another caller calling in from Jeff. Is checking in from Bolingbrook. Go ahead, Jeff. You're on with David and Julio.
I'd love to talk about Sugar Ray Leonard, one of the best boxers of all time.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, That fight, the first fight specifically up against Hearns, you know, he came from behind. He was probably down on the scorecards until he finally hurt him late in that fight. And then Hearns, unfortunately, the only problem that Hearns really had, his legs were not very thick. And unfortunately, he would tire at the end of fights. And you saw it in the same fight against Hagler. His legs went out from under him in that fight.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Sugar Ray was so exciting, I tell you.
Now he wasn't really exciting. And you know what, Jeff, I'm going to give you a recommendation, and I think it's an autobiography. If you get a chance to pick up the book on Sugar Ray Leonard, it talks about, you know, his growing up and, you know, his years in the boxing ring. And then even after the fact, it's a really, really good book. I'm not really sure who the author was. And again, I don't know if it was just a regular biography or an autobiography, but it was really good. Hey, Jeff, I appreciate the phone call. Let's go back out to the phone lines. And I'm not really sure where Kevin is, but he's checking in on a car phone. Go ahead, Kevin. You're on with David and Julio.
Good evening. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, sir.
I got to watch Jim Cott from the White Sox pitch a complete game on a Sunday and then come out and start the second game. And that's
okay.
That knuckleballer. And don't forget about Minnie Minoso, but my favorite pitcher, Louis Tiant.
Oh, Louis Tiant. I mean, where he would face out to center field before he threw the ball to home plate.
Well, that's because he couldn't figure out which substance he wanted to put on it.
Could be. Could honestly be the case. And you talk about Cott, but also Wilbur Wood started both ends of a doubleheader, I think at the old Comiskey Park, if I'm not mistaken. Hey, Kevin, appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much. Let's go out to Huntley right now. Let's pick it up with Eric. Go ahead, Eric. You're on the score.
Yeah, I was going to say two first basemen that I think are better, Fred McGriff and Bill Buckner.
Both really good, no question about it. The only reason I remember Mike Squires is because, you know, he wasn't known obviously as an offensive ball player. Some players were basically really good defensively. You know, Mike Squires would have some timely hits, but Mike Squires was so good at digging the ball out, which is a real, you know, knack in itself, to be honest with you. So again, you know, there's no right answer to this question. It's just a matter of opinion who you think is some of the best defensive players of all time. But I appreciate your phone call. Thank you so much. Let's go across state lines to Indiana. Let's pick it up with Brian. Go ahead, Brian. You're on the score.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You guys are mentioning a bunch of all-time greats. I love watching everybody listen so far. I'm going to talk about someone who's playing in the NBA today that I think kids should be watching is Kawhi Leonard. I love Kawhi Leonard's game. I can't turn him off. I try to watch every game he plays in. I just think he's fantastic. He plays the game the right way. I just wanted to throw him a shout-out. And one more thing, Tom Doerr. I got to have a beer with Tom Doerr and Johnny Redker back in the late 90s. I had a girlfriend who was a dancer for the team and for a Christmas party. He came down, him and Johnny Red and, Bob Love. Such nice guys. Had a beer with them in the hallway. Made my day. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, thanks, Brian. Much appreciated. And yeah, we're going to get Tom on. And I was very lucky to do stats between those two guys, him and Johnny Redker, back in the day, you know, for Bulls games. And I was up there when the Bulls won their 70th game up in Milwaukee, that famous season, 95-96. And Johnny Red would always buy beers for us at the Brat Stop on the way back from Milwaukee. And we'll talk to Tom about that. Let's take one more phone call before we have to take a break. Let's go out to Davenport, Iowa, and pick it up with Ralph. Go ahead, Ralph. You're on the score.
Yes. I'd like to talk about the best. Why do people never talk about Don Kessinger as one of the best defensive players of all time, at shortstop?
Oh, he was. There's no question. Him and Beckert, what a double play duo those two guys were. And Kessinger, of course, some people will remember, some people won't. Some people may not even know who Don Kessinger was. Don Kessinger was a great defensive ball player. And Ralph, I'm sure you remember, he would go deep into the hole and he would jump up and throw the ball to first base. He was really good at that. And he went on to come to the White Sox and worked on the South Side. So he's one of those two guys, or one of those rare guys, I should say, who played for both the Cubs and the White Sox.
Absolutely. And to me, hello?
Yeah, we're still here.
A lot of people talk about Ozzie Smith. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Finish your thoughts.
A lot of people talk about Ozzie Smith, but this guy, I know Ozzie Smith was good. I'm not downplaying him in any kind of way. But, man, this guy, Don Kessinger, he was just absolutely awesome. I would say this guy come from deep third, and somehow he'd be standing on top of second base and throw the first baseman out. You know? I've never seen it. I've just never seen anything like it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And he was a really good guy, too.
People don't get a guy that can hit his way out of a paper bag, but they don't get a guy no credit. But Don Kessinger was just absolutely awesome, man.
100%. Appreciate your phone call. Thank you so much. We're getting a lot of people calling in or checking in on the text line as well. Derek Lee, no slouch at first base. No question about that. He was really good. Ellis Valentine, also a very good defensive ball player. No question. Bo Jackson, best range and arm in the outfield. Just wasn't around long enough with that hip injury, or else he would have been more so in the record books. Johnny Unitas, talking about famous athlete from another city that you enjoyed watching. And here's somebody who remembers this, and I remember this too. Dave Parker throwing a player out at first base from right field. Yes, if he would play shallow, no question about it. And if there was like a one hopper to the outfield, he would be able to throw guys out at first base. He wasn't the only guy who could do that from right field, but he certainly, with that arm and the way he played shallow, especially near the right field line, he was able to do that. 312-644-6767. Let's take a break here, Julio. When we come back, we'll either go back out to the phone lines or we'll pick it up with Tom Doerr. You're listening to The Score. We'll be back right after this.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
628, and welcome back into The Score for Sunday, March 29th. David Schuster here. I'm going to keep you company up until 8 o'clock this evening. Our phone number, as always, 312-644-6767. You can text us, of course, at 67011. And the text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. And a programming reminder that we will start replaying the Cubs' run to the World Championship in the year 2016. It begins Wednesday night. Game 1. of the National League Divisional Series, 6 o'clock right here on The Score. A couple of topics on the table as we get ready to hear from, hopefully very shortly, Tom Doerr, Bulls broadcaster for 17 years. And today is the 25-year anniversary of Michael Jordan scoring those 55 points at Madison Square Garden. So one of the topics we have here on the table is the best player you've enjoyed, a non-Chicago player, over the years. I'll give you my list. Hockey, Wayne Gretzky. Football, Barry Sanders. Basketball, I couldn't limit it to one because I love so many basketball players, but Pete Maravich, Bill Walton, Dr. J, and then in baseball, the pitcher as a young boy growing up, I loved watching Sandy Koufax, and Ken Griffey Jr. as a young adult, watching him play baseball. And the other topic we have on the table, and again, talking about Ken Griffey Jr., best defensive players at their varied positions in Major League Baseball over all these years. The list is endless, and it's very ambiguous. Your answers are not wrong or right, neither are mine. It's just an ambiguous question because, I mean, you can go by certainly stat numbers, high percentage, but I'm just asking who you think are the best defensive players you've seen at the different positions, Major League Baseball, over all these years. 312-644-6767. Back out to the phone lines. Let's stay on the south side of the city and pick it up with Ed. Go ahead, Ed. You're on The Score.
How you doing?
I'm good, Ed. How are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic, you know, given these times, but I'm pretty good. But
good.
As far as double play combos are concerned, and I'm a lifetime Sox fan, but I have to admit, being somebody who played baseball, the double play combination of Glenn Beckert and Don Kessinger was unbelievable. They turned double plays, they made them look easy, and double plays are not easy. They were the person that called about Don Kessinger, I said, yeah, I had to do nothing but agree with him. Don Kessinger was one of the greatest shortstops. He was awesome. It was amazing. And now, and nobody's mentioned pitchers, but I don't know if there'll ever be a better fielding pitcher than Greg Maddux.
Yeah, Greg, he's definitely on my list. And, you know, Ed, you're right. It's not easy to turn over. Ed, it's not easy to turn over double plays, but certainly I hit into a numerous one, so I made it easy for somebody else. Ed, I got to run, but I appreciate your phone call. 312-644-6767. We're going to change course right now. We're going to talk a little basketball, and we're going to go out to the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, and bring it up with a real professional and a friend of mine over all these years, Tom Doerr, who was the Bulls broadcaster for 17 years. And I was very, very, very fortunate to sit between him and Red Kerr. And we had some great times, some that I could talk about on the air, some I never would be able to talk about. But Tom Doerr joins us here on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. And Tom is in much warmer climate down in Austin, Texas. I want to ask you about Austin, Texas before we get off the air here, Tom. But first of all, today is the 25-year anniversary of Michael scoring his 55 and Bill Winnington had the game-winning basket. You know, in general, what can you say about Michael? Because we were both so, so fortunate to see the best basketball player ever, up close and personal.
You know, David, you and I saw him in practice. I got to see him on the bus, on the plane, in the hotel, at meals, and playing golf, going to movies. So, I think I know Michael pretty well. First of all, I think he's a terrific guy, easy to talk to, easy to laugh, and the kind of guy that guys like to be around. And I think on the floor, he was the ultimate, I don't want to say killer, but the ultimate clincher, the guy that, you know, closer, I guess. Maybe that's the best term. Only it wasn't just the ninth inning for him. It started with the opening tip. But great guy, super competitive. And, boy, I remember that game against the Knicks. He had so much fun leading up to it and playing the game.
21 of 37 that afternoon, or was it evening? I guess it was evening, if I'm not mistaken, Tom. And you know, the beauty, he was going to shoot the basketball on that final play, of which Bill Winnington still remembers, obviously, when he always constantly says, well, Michael and I scored 57. Of course, he only had two, and Michael had the 55. But, you know, you go back and you look at the highlight, Jordan had basically tortured John Starks most of that night. And he beat him, and I guess Starks actually turned his ankle on that play. But here comes Ewing, you know, to go up and double-team and block the shot. And Michael, with the best play that he could make at that time, giving the easy feed to Winnington, and Winnington had obviously the game-winning dunk right there. I mean, that was just, you know, can you describe what it was like in that building? Because Madison Square Garden, you know, is still one of the meccas of all of sports. And when Michael played there that day, I'm sure the fever pitch in that building was off the charts.
Well, I don't think you ever went to New York, did you? You never did a Knicks game. I know you did a couple
actually,
road games.
I did, but this was actually after Michael was there. This was during the Ben Wallace era, if you will. So it wasn't the same.
And
Yeah, the Garden is not the greatest place to work at, to be honest with you. Oh, if that's where you're going with this.
It's brutal. The thing that I really liked is we had a guy that sat just to our right, and every TV announcer would talk about this guy. He looked, and I'm sure this was his whole goal, he looked exactly like Ben Franklin, right? Including the little round glasses, the whole bit. I mean, he really played the part well, and he had a rent-a-date at every game. And so he had this young lady who was always dressed very productively, right to our right. So anyway, it was always fun to watch his reactions because he loved the Knicks to the top of his lungs. Spike Lee kind of loved the Knicks, although maybe not in the last month or so. but he just loved the team. So when Michael... And you know, I've heard the story afterwards, but as Michael is just torching these guys, I'm getting more and more excited. I mean, you know better than most how I would announce.
Right.
Since you worked with us, what, 8, 7, 8, 10 years, whatever it
Something
was.
Something like that, yeah.
And so I get pretty excited, and the Garden got quieter and quieter and quieter. And so Ben Franklin over to my right finally gets up and leaves right as Winnington dunks the ball, because Johnny loved to find out what Ben was doing, what Ben Franklin was doing. So we talk about it during the break. Ben threw his popcorn or whatever he did. So, but that's how we gauge the Knicks fans. And he hits that shot, or he makes the great pass to Billy, and Winnington knocks it in and hammers it home. And Ben just gets up and walks away, and I'm standing up. I'm so excited about, you know, witnessing just what a great game and great performance. And Michael turns over and looks at me and kind of points at me, and he's laughing like, yeah, I'm back. It's cool now. We can relax. It's fun again. But that's who he was. You know, he could turn it on for a play and then turn it off, but he wouldn't turn it off in the huddle. He talked basketball in the huddle. Remember the great scene from Miracle, where the movie Miracle, where the guys are in Norway, I think it is, and they're talking about the hot women all around the crowd, and then they have to practice after the game for another hour or 2 hours, whatever it was. That was Michael. You didn't do those things. If you were there for the game, if you were there for practice, that's what you were there to do. That was your job. It wasn't to go gas about the game last night. It was how to prepare for the next game.
Yeah, he always said that once he got, you know, between the lines or whatever you want to call it, that was his safe haven. And no matter what else was going on in his world or the world in general, that once he got on that basketball court, he was as focused an athlete as I've ever seen. And I'm sure you would agree with that, Tom. And there's one story that I'll always remember, and I'm sure you will too. Do you remember there was the back-to-back games against Washington? It was, I think, a Saturday and a Sunday.
Bradford Smith. Yep.
100%. You remember it exactly. And Washington won the game on Saturday, I think. And Bradford Smith had like 38 points, his career high by far. And he was a decent player out of Louisville. And Jordan was so steamed after that game. And oh my God, I can only imagine what it was like being on the plane with him as you guys flew out to Washington the next day. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think Jordan had 40 at the half on him the next day, did he not?
I think it was a little under what he had. But what I like to do, where we'd eat after the game was in the middle of the plane. And we'd all stand there with our plates and wait for the guys to, you know, and party to get done. So I had a blast saying things like, hey, Mike, nice game tonight. How many did he have? You know, something like that. And that's what he expected. He didn't expect you to be, you know, to pay homage to him. He wanted to be treated like anybody else. So I think that's exactly what I said. Hey, Mike, nice game. How many bets did you get on you tonight? And he just turned and looked at me, put his plate down. He was in the middle of the line, put his plate down and pointed at me. He said, you can talk about this before the game tomorrow. I will have the same number of points he had. However many he had, I'll have him by half. And, oh, he was steamed at himself. That's all he was mad at. He wasn't mad at anybody else. Wasn't mad at the kid. He was mad at himself.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that game started. And, I mean, he was focused in the playoffs, that kind of thing. But for a regular season game that if they didn't win, they didn't win. If they won, it was great. Man, that was classic MJ. Offense and defense. If that kid got the ball, Michael was gonna just nail him however he could to get that ball away to make sure the kid couldn't score.
Yeah, two more things about Michael, and we'll move on to something else here. But, you know, I always have told people over the years, not only did I have the pleasure of being up close and personal to watch everything Michael did, but I also heard everything that he said on the basketball court. That was worth the price of admission where we were all sitting, because you heard him talk to the other players. Now, he was, if not the best trash talker, he was right there. And he would tell people what he was going to do, and then he would do it. I'm going to go to the my right, and there's nothing you can do to stop me. Sure enough, that's exactly what he did.
He'd always say that he learned that from Larry Bird. Because Bird, before Michael, Bird was a great trash talker. John Stockton was great at it. I mean, they were great guys all over the league. But Michael would do that. But he always said he learned it from Bird. Because LB would say, I'm going to hit an 18-footer. I'm going to go left and fade away. And I know, and you know, there's nothing you can do about it. And so Michael kind of learned from LB. But, he was really good at it. And I bet he's still really good at it on the golf course.
Yeah. Hey, Tommy, I got to ask you this also, because there are so many wonderful clips on YouTube and elsewhere. The first time Michael, you know, took the whatever baby powder or whatever it is that they put on their hands and you know, clapped it in both yours and Red's face. And, you know, you would just like initially you would just like wave it off with your hands. But then over the time, you guys came out with an umbrella. You guys came out with like even a gas mask or some other stuff. Talk about the evolution of that and how much fun you had with that over the years.
I think Red started that the year before with JD, with Jimmy Durham.
Okay.
The late, great Jimmy Durham, one of the all-timers. So,
sure.
So when I got the job, JD called me right away and he said, look, it's fine. Don't think you're taking my job. I'm going to do something else. And so we talked a little bit about Red. We talked about several different things. He was consummate pro. He was awesome. And so that's one of the first things that he talked about. He said, look, Red's going to some night you're going to, you know, whatever, just go along with it. All right. So, David, the last time that happened, that we did a gag, Johnny brought little, you may have been there for this, he brought little handheld fans.
Yeah, I remember.
like a little handle with a little fan. I mean, really small. So we hold these fans, Michael loved it. He loved the gag. He throws the dust in our face and it blows back and some gets in his eye. And so you can imagine how we both are feeling right now, right? I mean, we're dead. So after the first break, Red motioned me to take off the headset, which I did. He says, can you see the headline like Thursday, whatever, let's say it was Monday. Thursday morning, the headline, former Bulls announcers Tom Dorr and Red Kerr, who had the little fans with Michael, were fired because we put the rosin in his eye. Oh, my God. I was concerned more for Michael. But Red was like, dude, we're in trouble. We're in real trouble. But what that got us, it was something else. But but God love him. Red, and you know this, David, Red loved those guys.
Sure.
Loved the Bulls, loved the coaches, the front office, the fans, to the top of his lungs. Every day that the Bulls did something, he was, because he was like the master of ceremonies. He was Mr. Bull. God, he loved it. And few people have been as happy in their job as he was in him, in his. He just loved it.
Yeah, you know, it was an incredibly sad day, the day he passed away, and it was also the same day that Norm passed away also. So, I don't know, there was some irony in that. And, you know, both those guys, they loved the Bulls differently, of course, but they loved the Bulls and basketball in general. And you know, I still have such fond memories of both those guys. And you know, talk about Red just for a second here, Tommy, because we had so many good times that we could talk about and some that we just can't. But you specifically told me, you know, and you texted me earlier, you remember very distinctly when the Bulls won the 70th game up in Milwaukee, and we would always drive back from Milwaukee, and we always would stop at that favorite watering hole, the Brat Stop, on the way back. And Red would always be so magnanimous. I don't think I ever paid anything, which was to my delight. I didn't have much money in my pockets anyway. But Red was always, like you said, the master of ceremonies. He would always take care of everything.
Yeah. Oh, and he and I talk about it. You know, he'd say at halftime, "Hey, don't forget. You know, we're anting it up for everybody." Fine, not a problem, Red. Because people mattered to him. He was. You get a lot of people that are power hungry in jobs like that, that don't care about their barber, don't care about the fire chief, whoever it is. That's who Johnny was. That's who I am. You know, I'm the same way. And probably to my detriment, I don't never have played the political game well. I don't understand it. I don't like it. But anyway, Red couldn't. If you were his barber, you were as important as his banker. It didn't matter to him who somebody was, what title they had. He was one of Michael Jordan's best friends. He didn't care if you didn't like him. He couldn't care less.
Yeah, so many great memories, you know, and I'm so fortunate to sit between the two of you over all those years. And like I said, watch championship basketball and then to, you know, to sit between the two of you. Those are, I'm never writing a book, Tommy, so don't worry. I won't put anything in any book that I'm not writing. But that would be a chapter in a book that I'll never write, was being able to sit next to the two of you over all those years. I want to ask you also, because unfortunately with this whole coronavirus thing, it's taken away a lot of opportunities for some young men, both in high school and in college, to play what was, you know, going to be a golden time in their lives for March Madness. And obviously, you were fortunate enough to do both, you know, at East Leiden, of course, along with your buddy Glenn Grunwald. And then, of course, later on at Missouri, I think you were in two NCAA tournaments. Can you just talk about what it was like for you to be involved both in the high school level and the college level? And you know, unfortunately, the young men of today are missing out that opportunity, especially the seniors in both high school and college.
Yeah, you know, at East Leiden, we never thought anybody was going to beat us. We were 28-0 when Proviso East beat us, and they played great. They played a great game. We didn't play great, but they did. They had a terrific game. At Missouri, you're right. I got to go to the NCAA tournament twice, got to play and be a big part of a couple of the wins. And so you feel like it's a big deal. You really have fun with it, and you can't wait for that next game. We landed for the Sweet 16. We landed in Houston. We're going to play LSU, and they beat us. They ended our season. But I remember there were police cars all over, and I was talking to Steve Stepanovich and Norm Stewart, our star and our coach. And I said to Norm, what the hell are all these police cars doing? He said, I don't know. Maybe they got a convict plane that they're bringing in or something like that. They were for us. They were there to escort us to the hotel. We didn't know. We had no clue. But it's those little things that I still remember, God, what, 40-some years ago, that mean so much, that are so much fun still, those memories are just still so delicious to remember the fun games and the wins and the stupid fouls you had and the timeouts you called or whatever. I mean, but it's so hard to beat.
Yeah, I feel so bad for, like I said, the seniors in both the high school level and the college level, and they were so looking forward. And there were some teams. I mean, talk about the University of Illinois. They were getting better and better as the season went on, and a lot of people had them, you know, pegged to make a run into the NCAA tournament, the high school level. You know, everybody got cut off because of, unfortunately, this virus. It's just a sad, sad thing. And knock on wood, hopefully this thing is overcome by, you know, the great minds in this country and everybody's cooperation, and sports will get back on track. But for right now, we just have our memories of things that have happened in the past. And Tommy, I really appreciate you joining us, because you brought up a lot of memories that have, you know, brought a smile to my face, and I know all our listeners as well.
Oh, good, David. I really appreciate it. Always glad to jump on. You have a great Sunday night. Good to visit with you again, my friend.
All right. Appreciate it. That's Tom Doerr. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Doerr. Tom is just one of the great storytellers. It was, like I said, for me, such a treat to work with both him and Red Kerr during the golden years of Bulls basketball when they were winning championships. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go back to the phone lines, read more of your text. 312-644-6767. Julio Roseo is my co-pilot and producer in our downtown studios. We'll be back right after this.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
6:54. Welcome back into The Score for Sunday evening, March 29th. David Schuster here, and I'll keep you company up until 8 o'clock this evening. We've already heard from Jeff Joniak talking about the Bears-New Orleans Saints game and everything concerning the Bears. We just heard from Tom Doerr, Bulls broadcaster during the golden years when the Bulls were winning championships. And coming up at the top of the hour, Bruce Levine will join us, the host of Inside the Clubhouse each and every Saturday here on The Score. Bruce covers everything baseball here in Chicago, and we'll have him talk about what's going on and what's not going on in Major League Baseball. But for right now, let's go back out to the phone lines. Let's go on to the south side, pick it up with a longtime caller, Ron. Go ahead, Ron. You're on The Score.
Hey, David, you know, it's very interesting. Great topic, man. And you know, my favorite sport is baseball. But the two athletes that I just really loved watching was Magic Johnson. And I think you even mentioned him, Barry Sanders. But defensively speaking, Roberto Alomar. Mm-hmm. And, oh, man, what's the shortstop name? Help me out, dude. I just
Ozzie Smith?
Name real. No. Omar Vizquel. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of good ones, but that was – but then lastly, speaking of that has to be one of my favorites. So, again, great topic, but – yeah, that is it. But Magic and Barry Sanders, yep, and Roberto Alomar, real quick. You know what Hawk Harrison said? He can beat you any way he wants. So that's another. I might have to put a Kenny Griffey also, but Roberto Alomar. So yep, great show, David, as always. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Much appreciated. You be safe out there. 312-644-6767. As I was compiling my list of best defensive players, and once again, this is pretty ambiguous. I mean, all the players that are on my list were great defensive players. Were they the best at their positions? I don't know. That's for other people to say yes or no. You know, Johnny Bench is the first name that comes to mind. You know, there was a lot of other great defensive catchers. I mean, he was so good. He's probably the best overall catcher in all – and everything that you combine, but he was the name that I put down. You know, I had a hard time for left fielders, because left field was initially always thought of as like the weakest part of the outfield. You know, the center fielder had to cover the most territory, the right fielder had to have the best arm of everybody, and then the guy in left field, and you could see this pretty much throughout baseball, it's usually the weakest of the three outfielders defensively. So I had a hard time actually coming up with a left fielder, but then I remembered Barry Bonds. And you can say a lot of things about Barry Bonds, and a lot of them would be negative, but Barry Bonds was a great defensive left fielder. He had a really good arm. He could cover a lot of range. I don't remember in his years in Pittsburgh who specifically played center and right field during those years, but he patrolled left field and, like I said, was a really, really good ball player. So he was the guy who came to mind, and this is long before his steroids and all that other stuff, you know, crept into his biography. But Barry Bonds is a really, really good defensive left fielder. All right, we're talking a little bit of baseball. So, of course, we want to turn to our baseball expert here on the Score, and that, of course, is Bruce Levine. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hear from Bruce. 312-644-6767. We'll be back right after this.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.